Are you hungry for good radio? Starving for sports talk, music, and more? Well, come and join the party on BCR 1090 AM in the Brooklyn Cottage area, or on the web at www.brooklyncottageradio.org. We'll be waiting.
Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein!
You are scared. Alone in a world with nobody home to hug you when you're crying. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the Halloween episode of Geek Speak.
Yeah, sorry guys. Hi, my name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, and of course podcasting at geekspeak.typepad.com. Episode 6 of Geek Speak coming at you right now. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed that nice little spooky intro there, because it is my favorite time of the year here, folks. It is Halloween time, and we are a weekend away from Halloween action. I myself will be heading over to a Halloween party today, a video game party held by my anime club here at Brooklyn College, and I will be in full swing with all of that glorious good time holiday fun. So I hope you guys have a nice Halloween as well. And once again, the number to call here is 718-951-4444 if you want to join in on any of the action. And most of all, the email address is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. So if you actually have anything to talk about while the show's going on, my Gmail's up right here, so go ahead and send me some information. And of course, just a little plug here that I must say, or else they'll shoot me. Over at the Kalula Lounge today, right outside of Brooklyn College, they'll be having a Halloween bash, the Brooklyn College Radio Halloween party tonight. From 8 o'clock, I believe, yeah, it starts at 8, so there we go. So that's tonight as well. Free for all Brooklyn College students, and if you're not a Brooklyn College student, give us some money. So anyway, here we are today on this episode of Geek Speak, and I am going to give you a nice mixed bag of information. I will give you a spooky report on the PlayStation 2. The slimline PlayStation 2s that are coming out now are not fully backwards compatible. What is up here? I mean, they must have dropped the ball or something along those lines, so I'm going to get into that as well. I'm going to give you some freaky, not really, information on a Zelda 3 NES cart that was sold on eBay that might very well be a real relic of the past here. And a incredibly, incredibly creepy, just creepy because it could very well be true someday, parody of censorship here in America when they turn the Hellsing anime into Hexing. Oh yeah, you know I love it. Well, I'm going to get things started off here. And of course, we might very well have an interview with Sean Nelson today if he does call in. If not, then I will try and get a hold of him sometime this week. Because, I'm getting a phone call right now. Text message, actually. Let's see what this is. I will read it on the air. Excellent. So I will be calling Sean in 10 minutes. His plane just landed. So he will be on tonight's episode of Geek Speak. It is 6:10, so it's 6:20. I will switch over from Geek News to an interview with Sean Nelson of Harvey Danger. I am a very, very happy man. So anyway, I'll get things started here with information that I was just mentioning about the PlayStation 2 Slimline that has been released by Sony. Now, up until this point, all PlayStation 2s were fully backwards compatible with PlayStation games, and everything was going right, everything was all perfect with the world, and all of the PlayStation owners could rejoice. Now, these days, they just came up with a brand new color with the PlayStation 2 Slimline. I believe it was a silver color, similar to what the PlayStation used to look like. And for some reason, and they're not actually answering why, these new PlayStation 2s are not fully backwards compatible. Now, The only thing that I could think of is that they actually change the hardware specs somewhere along the line, because that would be the only thing that really makes sense here. But why they would do something like that, that is a very, very good question. Now, I'm asking myself here, when a company changes the hardware specs along the lines, what could they possibly be thinking? Now, are they getting themselves ready for a PlayStation 3 and thinking, okay, this is the only way we're going to get the PlayStation 3 to work, so let's tinker with the hardware that exists and maybe get it working a little better for the next generation? Well, they made a boo-boo, because this is much, much worse. There are even some PlayStation 2 games that do not work fully here. In fact, actually, one moment here, guys. I am going to give you a quick song here, because I'm getting a phone call. Live radio, you gotta love it. That was just Sean Nelson calling me on my cell phone to make sure everything was all set for the interview coming up in about 10 minutes here on Geek Speak. So, as I was saying, with the PlayStation 2, now, there are some games, actually, on the PlayStation 2's hardware that are no longer going to work properly with the PlayStation 2. Actual PlayStation 2 games that are going to have trouble here. Now, there's a complete list that was released that I'm going to bring up right now so you guys can see. In fact, yeah, here's the news courtesy of Digit Online News. That's a UK website. I'm going to be bringing that up right now. Okay, here we go. One of the main games that you're not able to play perfectly, that might freeze while you're playing it, is Tekken 5. And this is a very, very recent game here. This is a game that Namco released only a year back. Not even a year back, actually. That was, you know, it's next generation of Tekken. It was going to be, you know, much better than the last one. And I played it, and I can certainly tell you it is much, 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 much better than Tekken 4. And, I mean, there's nothing really too special about it. I mean, it's just like the next advancement in Tekken games. Now, why anything like this would actually have trouble playing any sort of Tekken? Well, your guess is as good as mine, because I really cannot answer that for you. I seriously can. Now, here, let's see if I can actually have a list of the games here that are having problems. Okay, this doesn't actually have a list on it, but I do remember plenty of them offhand. One of which was Resident Evil 2 for the original PlayStation. That is now having a lot of trouble playing. There are actually cutscenes that will no longer have audio on Resident Evil 2. Now, that's a bit of a trouble right there, because, I mean, you play a game, you want the full experience. Without any audio, what's the point? All you're seeing is that little text scrolling across the site. It's like playing an NES game, you know? It's out of control, absolutely. Other games as well. Well, I mean, I'm still hung up on Tekken 5, honestly, because that just should not be happening. It should not actually have trouble playing its own games. I can understand a little bit the old PlayStation games, but so be it. Now, they're saying that the PlayStation 3 will be 100% backwards compatible. However, there have been other sources that have disputed that claim already, saying that the PlayStation 3 is going to have trouble playing these games, and possibly even more. Now, the Xbox 360, everybody knows, unless you buy that extra attachment hard drive, you will not be able to play your old games on it. So, this is almost like copying Microsoft here, and that's not really too much of a good thing for a company like PlayStation 2. Sony, that is. Obviously, PlayStation 2 is not the company. Be a fun company name, though, I gotta say. I was actually considering getting a PlayStation 2 for a while, but not anymore. I mean, I have a PlayStation 2 at home. I have a original PlayStation 2, the bulky kind. But now that it won't play a lot of the old PlayStation games, almost the entire appeal of the PlayStation 2 is no longer there. I mean, I would buy a PlayStation 2 knowing that I could go out there and play a bunch of old games, and I could buy them for damn dirt cheap. I'm a college student. I don't have a lot of money. And there are plenty of great PlayStation games that hold up over time. Chrono Cross, the Final Fantasies. Those are as fun to play today as they once were. Now, if I'm not going to be able to play games like that on my PlayStation 2, what is the point, folks? The whole selling point of the PlayStation 2 back in the day was that you could do this with it. And if you can't anymore, well, then they might have just very well lost a customer. His name is Ian Levenstein. I am not going to purchase any PlayStations that are not fully backwards compatible. Now, does this also apply to PlayStation 2 games with PlayStation 3? That's not out there right now. Like I said, PlayStation is telling people that their next generation systems will be able to play everything as normal. Now, will it actually be able to play things normal? That's completely up in the air. Because if there's one thing companies do better than anything, it is lying. Yeah, sure, PlayStation might be a very, very nice company, but yeah. They lie to better themselves. Everybody lies to better themselves, especially companies. Especially companies. So unless the PlayStation 2 shapes up in time for PlayStation 3 to hit, they're going to have some problems on their hands. Now, the Xbox 360 launches not too far from now. I mean, you could already pre-order it and all that. PlayStation 3, it's got a little while left, so they could very well save themselves here. Sony's Q2 profits are down due to the cost of the PlayStation 3. Rumors are going around that the PlayStation 3 is going to launch in 2006 for $400. Yeah, you heard me right, $400. That's the price of three, maybe even four, PlayStation 2s these days. Sony had a great business model back in the day. They were the first of their kind to successfully use the compact disc to their advantage. This day and age, they're not looking nearly as healthy anymore. So for shame to Sony. Shape up or ship out, that's all I have to say. And just so you guys know, this song might play a little longer than it usually does because I'm about to run out of the room to get myself a Harvey Danger CD. And then after that, we might very well have Harvey Danger, Sean Nelson, on this program. So I will be right back. Enjoy the happy Halloween music. We'll be right back. Ian Levenstein back with you here on Geek Speak, and we have a special guest caller coming in right now, Sean Nelson of Harvey Danger. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How's the weather over there on the left coast?
I don't know, because I just got off an airplane, and I'm standing at a baggage carousel, and I'm about to get on another airplane.
So. Oh, boy. One of those days, huh?
The weather looks nice, but I haven't experienced any natural air for some time.
Yeah, nah, I know how that is. I haven't flown too often, but I certainly know how that is. So, yes. So let's start things off a little small here. Can you give us everybody who is listening in right now a little backstory on Harvey Danger?
Sure. The short version is that the band was together from 1993 to 2001, and then we broke up, and then we got back together in 2004. We got a new drummer. We made a new record. So all told, 3 records, 2 EPs, and a lot of crazy experiences.
And they all lived happily ever after.
And they all lived happily ever after, exactly, the end.
Indeed. Okay, so what gave you the idea to put this new record on the internet?
I think it was based, well, there were a couple of reasons. One is that we knew it was going to wind up there anyway, and we figured why not just embrace it. And we figured that that's a big way that people listen to music nowadays, how they discover, you know, how they discover new music.
Oh, definitely.
But there was a larger sort of issue, which was that we've been on major labels, we've been on indies, we've had a very interesting, long, and diverse career, and I think that we really wanted to do everything we could to make sure the record was always available to anyone who wanted to hear it. And putting it up on our website for free, in addition to selling it, I mean, we definitely want people to buy it, but that seemed like the best way, if not indeed the only way, that we could actually control our distribution, because we've had problems with that in the past.
Okay. Now, have you seen a lot of crossover from people who have downloaded the album to people buying it?
Yeah, I mean, there's been really good crossover in that regard. I can't tell you numbers, because I haven't been looking at them lately, but I mean, obviously, there's been a lot more downloads than there have been sales, but I would say that the total number of people who have, you know, found out about the record and gotten interested in it and either bought a copy or donated a little money to the cause, or conversely have written about it on their blogs and encouraged other people to get into it or have come out to our shows, those numbers have been surprisingly strong, way stronger than we ever thought they would be.
Excellent. Now, okay, one second here. Okay, yeah. So the main thing that I'm wondering now, has there been any real industry reaction to putting your album out there for free?
I mean, we're pretty far below the music industry's radar at this point. I think people remember us, and when they remember us, they remember that we were a band that had a hit song in 1998, and, you know, they're like, oh yeah, whatever happened to those guys? Meanwhile, we struggled and put out another record on a major label. We've been involved in other projects. I co-own an indie label called Barsoof. People know about it, but they don't necessarily care. You know, there has not been there's been no negative reaction to us doing this, as far as I can tell. A lot of people in advance thought it was a crazy idea or thought it was dumb, but, you know, we just thought they were wrong. And it turns out, well, so far, it looks like we were right.
Have there been any other bands that that you've heard of that have expressed interest in possibly following in your footsteps and putting their albums out there for free?
Well, I know a lot of bands have put, you know, songs up on their website, giving people the chance to hear stream a record or whatever. I'm sure there have been others who have put their whole record up for free. I know John Vanderslice did it with his first record. I know this band, this electronic group called the United States of Electronica in Seattle, they also put their entire record up for free. You know, actually, that was an EP, come to think of it. But, you know, other people have done it. We're certainly not the first. But the reaction has been so positive thus far that I wouldn't be surprised if more people did it. It seems like a pretty good way, if you're thinking in the long term, about how to make your band, you know, sort of accessible to people. If you have that sort of an alternate perspective on what it means to be a professional musician, as we do, It's a good system for some of us. It's not a good system for everybody. Some people don't need to do it. Some people, it just doesn't make sense.
So there's been a pretty good turnout so far with the shows you've been doing on over in Seattle. And
Yeah.
Excellent.
We'll see. I mean, we're playing in Portland tonight. We haven't played there in about 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And so we'll see. I mean, I'm hopeful, but I'm sanguine, but I am skeptical that there's going to be a huge turnout. We'll see. I don't know. It'd be great if there were.
Now your album was Doug and also ended up on Slashdot at one point.
Yes.
Now, have you been seeing a lot of turnover from people who first found out about the band on Dig or on Slashdot and going to download the album?
I dare say that has been huge. We figured that it was a possibility that those kind of sites would find out about this and maybe write about it. We didn't really do anything to try and, as far as I know, we didn't do anything to try and, jump up and down, wave our arms in the air. We just kind of put the thing out there and let our fans know that it was there and tried to let it start from there. But since that has happened, yeah, there's been a lot of postings on our message board at harveydanger.com and just a lot of, a lot of positive attention. I mean, I went over and I'm not a computer guy. Jeff, our guitar player and pianist, was really the brains behind this operation, and he, in conjunction with a friend of his, built the whole back end for how the downloads work and everything. But I went over and read the Slashdot message boards that related to this and some stuff that I saw at Fark.com. And I must confess that there was this, I mean, while there was a whole lot of positive sort of, sorry, airport people,
it's okay.
Whole lot of positive, people saying things like, wow, it's so great that finally a band that, that has some notoriety is doing this, good for them, fighting the RIAA or whatever. There's been just as many people saying, this isn't original. My cousin Jim puts his entire record up on his website, and no one writes about him on Slashdot. Up yours, Harvey Danger. But, I mean, generally speaking, you can't, that sort of, a lesson we learned long ago is that you can't have any control over what percentage of people like you or don't like you. You just want to make sure you're available.
Oh, sure, definitely.
To a lot of people to be able to like you. But, yeah, a lot of people have come to our site and said, hey, I never heard of the band, read about it on Slashdot, checking it out. And, they generally say things like, I'm not a computer aficionado myself, but I certainly have known plenty of them, and I know that they're not the most effusive bunch. And so they say things like, yeah, the music's really not too bad. Or, like, not as terrible as everything else in the world or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I think means I love it.
I think so. Yeah. Well, for everybody,
that translates to brilliant.
For everybody out there on the internet who says something's great, there's always going to be eight people that come along saying I did it first. So
right, exactly.
Yeah, and of course, who said that whoever said that message boards meant nothing? This entire interview came about with a private message on a message board. So there we go.
Right. That's true. I mean, I know a lot of bands claim that it is not the case, that they, a lot of bands claim that they do not read their own message boards. Every band I know with a message board reads their message board.
And there are some bands that actually still have message boards after their breakup. I mean, I'm a member of the Ozma boards. I've been a fan of band Ozma for years
now.
Ozma's
a great band. Yeah, they were fantastic.
Yeah, and over at OzmaFans.com, there's still an entire community going on, even though the band broke up a year ago, so...
Right.
There you go.
It's true. I mean, that was a big thing with us. Like, we were not together for 3 years or so. And during that time, our message board was thriving, not with huge numbers of people. I mean, today there's over 1,000. For a long time, there were, a few hundred. It was incredibly heartwarming during that entire time. To learn that that people still cared and that people really knew the records and knew stuff about us other than our hit song. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I found out about you guys actually through a friend of mine who just one day started playing your CD, and I'm like, wow, who is that? And they're like, Harvey Danger. I'm like, oh, wow, I remember them. And there you go. From there,
yeah,
got into you guys, and to this day, here I am. So.
Yep, that's how it works. I mean, it's funny. We were exposed to millions and millions and millions of people. and yet, you know, by far the most exposure we've ever gotten is by word of mouth and people saying, guess what, there's more than just that one song.
Exactly. That always helps, indeed. Now, to talk about the record for a little bit here, I have to bring this up just because, you know, being on the message boards, this was just the most amusing thing. So there were some people who ended up with a French, How to Learn French CD as the second CD, as opposed to the actual bonus disc.
Yeah, yeah. That's apparently, this is something that happens at CD pressing plants from time to time. I've talked to a lot of people who, you know, put out records that I know, and they say this is a common thing where, you know, upwards of, I don't know, like fewer than 20, 30 copies in a given pressing, because of the way the machines run, the previous pressing, you know, that gets the dregs of the previous pressing gets left in with your batch, and it just sort of, you know, so that's that has happened a few times, and obviously anyone who that happened to got the actual bonus disc mailed to them, and it was, I think most people had a pretty good sense of humor about it. I hope so, anyway.
Well, I'm sure it was, because, I mean, you know, going from French to Harvey Danger is certainly an interesting change.
That's true. Although, I would, you know, I wouldn't mind brushing out my French.
Well, actually, I was one of those guys who got the unreleased disc that was going that was floating around for a while.
Oh, yeah.
With that nice little French snippet in it. So.
Oh, God, I can't believe that's out there in the world. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Now, I got to ask you also a question about the song Cool James. Now, is that actually about LL Cool J?
No, it's really not about LL Cool J.
Okay.
It just sort of, you know, it just sort of rhymed. And it was, you know, just sort of an absurd thing in there. And you know, that song's been kicking around for many years. And we just, you know, I just thought it was funny. It's not, it has nothing to do with LL Cool J, really.
Okay, yeah.
Except in the sense that, like, you know, don't call it a comeback. Like, that. He does definitely have that thing about him where, like, you got to respect LL Cool J for having reinvented himself so many times.
Oh, definitely. And now here you are trying to get back into the world and, you know, hoping that that people find you. So
yeah, there's something to that, but it is abstract at best.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Now, also, I wanted to ask about the song Little Round Mirrors, because right away, that's the song that grabbed me the most on this entire album here.
I think that's true of a lot of people.
Now, what's the story behind that song?
There's no more story behind that song than any other. I think it's just that, you know, like, it's a song about the vicarious relationship that exists between music fans and musicians. It doesn't necessarily have to be musicians or music fans, but, it, I mean, you know, sort of artist and audience.
Yeah.
And how you can identify with people who make the stuff that means a lot to you and still not know them and let that sort of stand in for your connections with other people.
Okay. What should we expect to see in the future from Harvey Danger? Any national touring plans or anything along those lines?
We'll be doing some national touring. We can't tour really extensively, but we will do some touring next year. More records, more EPs. We're really loving the way things are going. The way this record has been received has been just great, and we're eager to do some more.
So definitely not another 4-year break in between records this time along.
No, that's a promise.
Excellent. That sounds great to me. Well, cool. thank you so much for joining me today, Sean.
Thank you. I'm so sorry about the delays.
That's all right. It happens every now and then, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Just scheduling situations. And once again, the website is harveydanger.com, and you have that up both in torrent and direct downloads from the site. That's correct?
That's correct. Yeah, any way you want it.
Excellent. Okay, well, any listeners who have not heard of you before, definitely find a look, and I hope you guys enjoy it nearly as much as I do. Thanks a lot for joining us, Sean.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye-bye. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was Harvey Danger. Sean Nelson of Harvey Danger here on Geek Speak on Brooklyn College Radio. Once again, their website is at harveydanger.com, and they have their entire album up for free on the website. And, of course, using BitTorrent to their advantage. Now, a lot of people badmouth BitTorrent for something that, you know, can be used for wrong. And all I have to say is everything can be used for wrong, honestly. If you look into it, pretty much everything out there can be used for wrong in one way or another. Now, BitTorrent is a cost-effective way to get your music out there. And those people who actually do use it for good can very much tell you that. And Sean Nelson is a glowing example of people using the internet as their friend as many a geek has in the past, and going out there and proving that things are not always what they seem. Not just for piracy, folks. You can use it to your benefit. And here is a track, one of the tracks that I mentioned with Sean here on Geek Speak, that I absolutely adore. And I'm going to play that for you right now. And once again, this is up. The entire album is up on their website, both as a torrent and as a zip file. And also, they have it not only as MP3s and beautiful quality MP3s at that, with lame encoding and the best you can find on the internet, but they also have the .oggs out there, OGs, which work with Winamp. Do not you work yet with iTunes, but there is a thing you can download that actually attaches itself, a nice little attachment onto iTunes that will allow you to play OGs, but as of now, I believe that's only for Macintosh. Now, the old version of it is out for Windows, but it does not work with iTunes 6. You can import them perfectly fine, but playing them, that's another story. So those people who do not have Winamp and strictly go with iTunes, I would recommend downloading the MP3 version of the album. So here is a track off the album, my favorite track by far. This is, of course, Little Round Mirrors, off the first disc of the album, Little by Little. Hope you guys enjoy it.
Next to your twin bed by the spring and
Ian Levenstein back with you here on GeekSpeak at brooklyncollegeradio.org and, of course, podcasting at geekspeak.typepad.com. That was certainly fun, I got to say. Sean Nelson, very, very nice man, nice enough to come on the show and talk a little bit about their new album. So to switch things back over to the typical GeekSpeak format, once again, mwahahahaha, happy almost Halloween, I'm going to discuss an interesting find that has graced the internet over the past couple of days, and that is the Zelda 3 prototype. Yeah, take that in for a minute. Zelda 3. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, what? Zelda 3, so what? You know? What's so wrong with that? I mean, it came out. But, the Zelda 3 that you're thinking of is Zelda 3 for the SNES. Very, very, very different game than the one that I'm talking about. This is Zelda 3 for the NES. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, that never came out. What are you talking about? Well, it was in development. It has been confirmed that there was a Zelda 3 in development for the SNES back when the SNES came out. So yeah, Zelda 3 was in development for the NES when the SNES came out. They then shifted gears, similarly to the way that Nintendo shifted gears on Star Fox 2 and ended up making Star Fox 64 instead. It's just the way it happens. Every now and then a system comes out and you shift gears and a game gets left behind. Well, Zelda 3 was left behind. And Zelda 3 was just sold on eBay for $3,000. Yeah, you heard right. $3,000. Now, that does not happen very often, I must say. It's not often when Zelda 3 or any prototype of a game ends up in the hands of its fans, but it happened here. And I must say, it's a great find. Now, the last time something like this happened, obviously Star Fox 2, which I discussed previously, I believe, just in passing on one of the old shows of GeekSpeak. Now, Star Fox 2, that is. Wow, I'm still out of breath. Star Fox 2 was an abandoned project by the SNES. It was completely finished. Literally, almost completely finished. It was then later polished up. There were a couple of bugs here and there. It was later polished up by those individuals who like to get their hands on games and get them out there. Yeah, the ROM hackers. They hacked the ROM. They translated it from Japanese to English. And they fixed all the tiny little bugs that were in this final product. And they made sure that gamers had a playable product. Well, I would not be surprised if indeed this Zelda 3 does get dumped on the internet, which it will. Because this guy has pretty much promised that he will put this game out there as soon as it gets in his hands. Gamers are going to have an interesting experience on their hands. They're going to get to see what direction Zelda might have very well gone had things gone slightly different. Had perhaps the SNES happened a year later, or maybe two. Now, the Zelda 3 NES eventually ended up becoming Zelda 4, the fourth game in the Zelda games. It became a Game Boy game, and they took most of the elements of this Zelda game that was never finished and put it into that game. But there were a few things that were different. Obviously, the graphics were much different because it's a step down from the original Game Boy. Now, not the Game Boy SP, the original Game Boy from the Nintendo. And Nintendo knew this, but they knew that they had a almost finished game on their hands, so hey, why not put it out there? All the prototypes that have ended up on the internet, the most famous one by far, the Sonic 2 beta, which ended out there with two levels that were never released in the final Sonic 2. That's Wood Zone and Hidden Palace Zone. Wood Zone isn't even in the final ROM of Sonic 2. Hidden Palace Zone is there, but all of its data is corrupted because they knew that they were not going to have it playable. But it was still there. Now, what does this Zelda 3 NES cart ending up in the internet mean? Does it mean that we might perhaps get some more famous unfinished games out there? That's a good question, folks. But all I'm saying is that I will certainly try and get my hands on the Zelda 3 when it is actually dumped, because I'm curious. As a casual gamer, as a gamer who likes retro a lot more than he likes a lot of the stuff that's happening now, where would the gaming world have gone had Zelda 3 been released? It's a good question. And we might very well have an answer real soon. Now, the music I've been gracing with you all day, other than the Harvey Danger track, of course, nice, spooky soundtrack. It's from the Hellsing anime, one of my favorites. Now, this is a very, very, very old spoof. It's about 3 years old. But AnimeJump.com had a sneak preview in the summer of 2002 of what Hellsing would look like on American television. Now, before you say, oh, wait, Hellsing wasn't on American television, I'd say you're wrong. It was on cable for a while there. And back when Cartoon Network was buying up every single property they could possibly get their hands on, Anime Jump figured, this is the best possible time to put a parody out there. Because everybody knows of all of the changes that were put into certain animes. Whether it be removing some blood, or whether it be more drastic, such as removing entire episodes from the run order of an anime. Now, one that I can think of in particular, where that did occur, is Dragon Ball Z. Now, I'm not a Dragon Ball Z fan at all. That much I can say. Never have been, never will be. But I don't like censorship too much. And I never will. And here is their example of censorship. They put out there, I'll read this to you right now. Coming soon, an exciting new series. Wow, isn't that exciting, folks? It's amazing. Hellsing, a slickly produced story about modern-day vampires in England, is one of the most hotly anticipated anime series of summer 2002. The show is stylish and filled with exciting action and memorable characters. But it has nothing to do with the manga. Anyway, obviously, the best way to promote such a series is to show it on television. And Hellsing definitely will show up on TV. Scout's honor. I am totally serious. No, he's not. Of course, given the graphic nature of the show and the numerous references to potentially offensive things like hell, the Vatican, the Protestant Reformation, and those horrible limeys, some changes will have to be made for the broadcast version. First of all, Hellsing is a cartoon, which means that is meant for children. Therefore, creating an edited Y7 version is necessary. No! Alright, fine. Because of this, Hellsing, or as it is now known, Hexing, oh my god, Hexing. That's really sad. No longer takes place in England. It takes place in the crime and zombie-infested Panda City. Resident Evil, anyone? The main character, Al U. Card. Heh. Al, is a wacky, fun-loving vampire who fights evil with his trusty talking sidearms, Smith and Wesson. The guns shoot specially engineered bullets which only hurt bad guys. Because that's possible. Right. Al, along with his hilarious werewolf sidekick, Wolfie, yeah, that's where I should probably stop, and yet I'm going to continue, works for a shadowy organization known as the Good Guys. Heh. Hey, well, that's a very descriptive name, really. The Good Guys are led by Acura Integra. Nice product placement there. A forceful and charismatic man. Yeah, man. Not a woman anymore, a man. Integra was originally a woman, but her deep voice and apparent lack of sexual characteristics led the producers to accidentally assign her a male voice actor, along with her butler, Jeeves. Walter. Jeeves. No. I'd rather them name him Alfred, for God's sakes. Thanks to the latest in digital animation techniques, many of the original show's crosses and other threatening religious icons have been removed and replaced with more cheerful, less traumatic symbols. Kids will love Hexing. And they have a little picture here of Smucker's Concord grape in a scene with a whole bunch of blood on it. Also, much of the show's trademark gore and violence has been digitally painted out. Scenes that are simply too bloody, like the one pictured above, have been altered to give the blood the appearance of delicious Smucker's brand grape jelly. Kids love jelly! A particularly troublesome character was Anderson, the priestly opponent of Al. For the new TV-friendly version, Anderson's name has been changed to Alexander Dastardly. Oh, dear God, it's the Smurfs. And his trademark cross has been digitally replaced with a clock. So apparently he's got Rip Van Winkle's clock, similar to the one worn by popular role model Flavor Flav. I really wish I didn't just read that. Kids love Public Enemy. I really wish I didn't read that. Also problematic is the sigil on Alexander's glove, which originally read Jesus Christ is in Heaven. With the latest in digital replacement methods, the glove now contains a much less sinister, wholesome message. Cheese is good for you. It is, I guess. The original show featured numerous battles with scary, ugly vampires and ghouls. Obviously, this is not suitable for children's television, so the vampires and Hexing are both more recognizable and less threatening. Example, Count Chocula. I am going to shoot somebody. This is especially convenient because it's already leading towards numerous lucrative product tie-ins. Al's hilarious vampire antics are a great match for Count Chocula cereal. Altogether, Hexing is sure to be the most popular cartoon amongst boys aged 4 to 12. Yeah, right. Kids won't be able to resist Al's zany battles with the bloodthirsty, murderous forces of evil. In fact, Hexing might just be the next Pokemon. If it was, I'd have to destroy the world. Seriously, be sure and watch it. I swear to God, if this was true, there'd be so many screaming fangirls right now, and they'd all be screaming, "No!" Which would be really, really sad. Although, I'd watch it because it'd be entertaining. But, yeah. See, luckily, anime censorship has not gone that far, and it's actually gotten a little better over the years, but had that actually happened, we'd really, really be sad right now. We as in the Helsing fans, and we as society in general. Dear God. It's a wind-up here on GeekSpeak, and this is literally a wind-up because I have 3 minutes left here. So I'll start things off, and I'll finish them off with the best sports I can possibly talk about right now. The Chicago White Sox have swept the Houston Astros in the World Series for the first time since 1919. The White Sox are world champions. The Astros are not. Now, I know I picked the Astros in 6. Now, I know a lot of people picked the Astros. But one small problem occurred in Game 1 of this World Series. And that one small problem is Roger Clemens. Roger Clemens came out of the game in his second inning with a pulled hammy. Hamstring for the people who don't know what a hammy is. As soon as that happened, the entire season was dead for the Houston Astros. I will guarantee you that had that not happened, this would not have been a sweep. Because the Astros needed to win that first game. And had Clemens pitched the entire game, well, chances are things might have actually turned out a little different. But he didn't pitch that first game. He only pitched 2 innings. And 2 innings is a relief job. That's not a starting job. That is pathetic right there. Roger Clemens showing signs of his age. Roger Clemens, a dead man to a lot of Houston Astro fans right now. He'll be back next year probably, because there's no way he's going to leave on such a note here. Because he is a man of honor. Just like Brian Cashman's a man of honor. That's why he's back with the Yankees. But I'll talk about that on the Sporting Goods on Monday. But the Astros deserve better than this. They really did. Had they had healthy players, had they had healthy pitchers, had they had a healthy mind coming into this, things would have turned out much differently. But they didn't, and because of that, the White Sox are champions. Do they deserve to be champions? Sure they do. I mean, they made it there, didn't they? I don't think anybody thought this was how it's going to. This is how it was going to happen, though. Except for possibly the White Sox. So congratulations, White Sox. Let's see if we can keep it up next year, huh? I don't think so. That's the windup. Here's the pitch. Every Monday from 2 to 4, here on Brooklyn College Radio, you can hear me, Ian Levenstein, with Michael Hornstein, Jason Green, and Joey here on the Sporting Goods. So I'm going to wrap things up here on Geek Speak. Once again, thank you kindly to Sean Nelson for calling in on today's show. Once again, you can download his music at harveydanger.com. And also, he has a blog at seannelson.net. We can download a lot of his solo work and other projects. You can email GeekSpeak at speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. You can send me comments. And I did get one comment this week, but I won't leave that for next week because I don't have time to get into that right now. But anyway, thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week here on GeekSpeak. Have a good week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. Damn it! Bye. Bye.
It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.